anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard,
normal,
or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I'll do that.
Hello and welcome to the Anomaly Podcast. I'm Jen, and I was my elementary school's quarterback princess, and I am an anomaly.
My name is Angela, and one of my best high school moments was dancing on the 50-yard line for a giant crowd at Kyle Field, a big Texas football thing, and I am an anomaly.
Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, everyone. It's me, Angela, and Jen.
And Jen.
Right.
Well, we've got a grudge match for you, ladies and gentlemen. A grudge match for the centuries.
I'm kind of excited about this. This was one of the ones where our planning session was almost as interesting as the podcast.
I know, right? Like you were saying, we should record it.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Next time.
We'll record it next time for our people who donate to the show.
We're going to have some special things for people who donate to the show. I'm excited about launching that soon.
So let's tell the people what we got up our sleeves.
In honor of the Super Bowl happening next weekend, which will be the weekend after this is published, we have decided to do a giant versus episode. This is something we've kind of teased for a long time, off and on, talked about doing. Nerds and geeks and all of us anomalies, we really like to combine our genres and say, who would win in a fight between blah, blah, blah? And so we picked some fantasy. This is our fantasy show.
Edition.
This is our fantasy edition. And sorry, that was awesome. This is our fantasy edition. And you started out with who?
Sauron and Palpatine. Palpatine.
Did you just say Palpatine?
I did say Palpatine.
It's totally not that.
I know.
Okay. So, Sauron and Palpatine, and then we came up with a few others. We're just going to discuss it, maybe take point, counterpoint, but we're going to see who would win. Mm-hmm. Who would win if? It's all fantasy, but it's not from the same show.
And we tried to mix it up, too, because a lot of times you hear guys doing this kind of stuff, and they have just guys, right?
Yes.
So, just guys. Yeah, we've got chicks in here too, and
yes,
fighting each other and dudes.
In my opinion, of all the ones we talked about, a chick is the most powerful one, and that is why we had to kind of create our own. There's going to be a special version, special section of this podcast.
Yeah, because, for people who have read The Wheel of Time.
Yes, because. Well, do you want to explain it now or do you want to explain it later?
We can explain it now.
Okay.
We don't want to spoil it for people because we've read them. Yeah. We've read the Wheel of Time series by Robert Jordan. And if you haven't, you probably won't know what we're talking about, so you don't have to listen to that part.
Well,
or it might just be entertaining no matter what.
Anyway, because you may not care or want to listen to it. But we were talking about different people we would want to pit against each other. And in our conversation, we started talking about Galadriel because she's so awesome. You know, we love Galadriel. But I was worried, and Jen too, that like everyone we would pit her against, like, there's no competition because she's kind of completely overpowered for almost everyone. I mean, she almost gets Sauron, and the only reason he gets the best of her, or he doesn't even get the best of her, but it was because it was a surprise attack. I think if it was a fair fight, I really think she would be able to stand toe-to-toe with Sauron. So that's saying a lot.
Yeah.
And if you did listen to our Wheel of Time one a long time ago, I described the Ajahs, the women of the Two Towers, as a bunch of Galadriels walking around, which would be pretty terrifying. When we were talking about all the different people she could be against, I kind of posited that the only people I could imagine her being in a fair fight with would be one of the really great Amyrlans or one of the really great women of the Tower. So we realized that that's not really everybody's thing.
Yeah. And
in order to include everyone, and also so that we don't spoil it for anyone, because some of the people we're going to be talking about how their powers develop, you know, it's plot revealing. So at the end of this show, we are going to do the conversation about Galadriel and the women of the Tower. Or maybe a specific person. So we're not going to give that away. That will be like a special treat at the end of the credits and all of that stuff. So
So
that's what we're doing with Galadriel.
We have, who do we have on the list here? Sauron versus Palpatine, Galadriel versus question mark.
Yep.
Voldemort versus Yoda.
Yep.
The White Witch versus
the Wicked Witch of the West.
Yes. Saruman versus Dooku.
That's like a given. You have to.
Yeah. Bellatrix versus Kaelin Amnil from The Sword of Truth, or the Legend of the Seeker television series based on The Sword of Truth.
Dolores Umbridge versus Evil Willow.
And Cordelia versus Cersei Lannister.
In a battle of bitchiness.
And Xena versus Faith.
In like a true like MMA match. I just want to be specific on what our field
is.
Right. You know, we have a pretty good fantasy lineup here. Mm-hmm. And I think it'd be good to do a superhero lineup and then a sci-fi lineup. And so we could kind of do, and even if those become mini casts, you know, mini skirt casts, it's probably good that we started with this because this is a good, solid fantasy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So first up, in this corner, we have Sauron versus Palpatine, Emperor of the Galaxy, far away.
He's like the ultimate Sith. So it would make sense that he would fight the ultimate, you know, Sauron. Of course, you know, in the world of Lord of the Rings, Sauron is basically like an archangel. He's Lucifer.
Yes.
So that's a lot of power. However, when you look at the power that Palpatine is able to wield as a Sith, as like the highest level Sith that we know of in the original trilogy, and even beyond, you know, given the rules of each world, I feel like they could give each other a run for their money.
I think Sauron is a little more powerful than Palpatine because he is the... Okay, Palpatine is an evil dictator. Sauron is the ruler of the underworld. I mean...
True, but listen to this, though. Except for Saruman, who... I don't know what happens to him. That's a conversation for a few minutes from now. Except for Sauron, the only people he has on his side are a bunch of really creepy people he bred just for killing.
That's what Palpatine did, too.
No. Palpatine... Palpatine has thinking... feeling individuals who have been brainwashed or have been programmed into his service, or people like Anakin who he has manipulated into his service. And there are more, and he has a lot of followers. I mean, the followers that he has are not just a bunch of bumbling orcs or even Uruk-hai, you know, not just bent on the destruction of man. These are people who like really believe that the dark side's the way to go. I mean, these are followers. These are, what did you call them last time? Acolytes. To me, an acolyte is a much stronger follower than an orc.
What would Saruman be to Sauron then?
Well,
because
that's
he
the
has
Dooku.
Men too.
See,
under
to me,
his
that's
wing,
the Dooku. So. That's the Dooku. That's why I think the Dooku to Saruman is a good matchup.
Okay.
Honestly, I mean, granted, it's funny to talk about anyway because they're both Christopher Lee, but. The reason why it works is because it is two similar characters.
Yeah.
Because they have more complicated situations. You know, Palpatine and Sauron are just evil. Yeah, in a different way. But if you look at it in the two universes, you know, the highest powered Sith could be on the same plane as an archangel of the world of, you know, because Tolkien thought in those terms, you know.
Yeah. So if they're both going against each other, and is this a match just between the two of them or their armies?
And are
they included? So Sauron would bring his orcs and goblins and men, and Palpatine would bring his clone troopers and droids.
I don't know which one
Anakin.
To do. I feel like both. I think we need to do both. Okay. Like, okay. I think just like Thunderdome, one... evil bad guy, you know, two evil bad guys enter, one evil bad guy leaves. Now I feel like we do have to take sides.
Yeah.
And I am on Palpatine's side on this one.
Okay.
I think Palpatine, you know, he's got the Force lightning. He has just enough knowledge of the physics of the world, you know, that he can kind of get in there. I feel like Sauron is too far removed to be able to be a proper, you know, he has to have everything around him in order to cause damage. But he
can see beyond. Like, I know that Palpatine has the ability to foresee the future, but Palpatine has the eye, and the eye of Sauron can see everywhere. And also, what happens when he gets the One Ring? It's over.
You didn't make that stipulation.
Are we talking about Sauron of old when he fought the first time against men?
I guess we can do that. Like, full power.
Mm-hmm.
Full
with
power.
The ring.
With the ring. I still think Palpatine.
Okay.
I mean, I think that you, if you combine, okay, whenever you talk to someone like you or Russell or any of the nerds who don't want to answer this question, because whenever you're like, oh, what power would you have? Every single Star Wars fan who doesn't want to answer the question just says they want to be a Jedi. They want to have Jedi powers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to have force lightning, force push, force everything, mind control, blah, blah, blah. Nobody ever says I want to have powers of Sauron because it's too ephemeral. It's too weird. You can't fight with those kind of powers. You will win if you have powers of Palpatine. Just putting it out there.
But Sauron possessed kings and like took them over and manipulated them too. So, I mean, can you say that Palpatine could make puppets out of rulers? I guess he
made
did.
He did out of the entire galaxy, out of the entire republic.
He strong-armed them. And he manipulated one guy.
Sauron had one tiny little Earth that's not even as big as our Earth now. I mean,
Middle
nothing.
Earth.
Middle Earth is just so tiny. Have you seen the map? I mean, it's not that big. Palpatine had galaxies, planets. He destroyed planets. And he has technology. I'm just saying. You're right. It's better if we take time.
I told you.
But I think it's interesting that I like that it came about organically. We didn't say which side we were going to take. That
I
was
know,
better.
And I didn't do any homework either, so I can't really bring any legit arguments to the table about it. So,
I loved it. And yeah. The thing is, I thought I'm actually more, the funny part about this is that I'm more of a Lord of the Rings nerd than you are, and you are more of a Star Wars nerd than I am. So it's interesting that I took Palpatine's side.
I'm rereading the books right now. So I'm in the middle of the Two Towers. And it seems like, I mean, Sauron is like all powerful. I mean, he's terrifying.
In Middle Earth. I'm just being a bitch. But this is, you know what I mean? That's the point of this. All right. But I think we've.
Yes. Okay. Let's move on.
Those are the. So that's how we're going
to
do this.
I want people to chime in, though. I mean,
well, I
obviously, they're going to have arguments for and against.
Oh, they're going to have opinions.
We want to hear
it. We should put anything up about this until.
Yeah.
Like, I think we should say we're going to have a versus, but not say any details.
Mm-hmm.
Then put the show up and then let them argue about it.
Yeah.
I think that will be better. Okay.
Okay. So Voldemort versus Yoda. So I know Yoda pretty well. I know you do too, but I mean, I think you know Voldemort and his powers better than I do.
Okay.
Because you're more of a Harry Potter fan.
I am. And okay. So this is the thing with Voldemort. And it's kind of this, you know, it's the same reason why Sith sometimes win battles is because Voldemort is a hair puller and he scratches with his nails and he is mean and he bites. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to pull punches.
He's a dirty fighter.
He's a dirty fighter. But the problem is that Voldemort needs a wand.
That's true.
In order to do any damage. But Yoda does pretty good damage from afar too, you know? So I could see both of these, but you know, Voldemort, you know, you got the right spells.
How do you defend yourself from a spell if you're
Force
user?
But yeah, we don't know what kind of
work together.
What kind of defense a force user would have against the spells.
Well, I mean, Yoda could use his lightsaber to block something. I mean,
well,
he uses
he
it
use
for
it
force lightning. What kind of powers does
it? he could use it to block the spells that are more tangible.
Yeah.
You know, the spells, like, you know, some of the curses, they would be hard to block, but they could technically be blocked, I guess, because, you know, the killing curse and that kind of stuff, the way that it hits you, I don't know how it could be blocked except for by another person. You know, that's kind of the whole story of Harry Potter.
So let's envision this. We have Yoda
Thunderdome.
Versus Thunderdome. It's just the two of them.
Just the two.
It's a throwdown between the two. So
how does this go down?
I think that Yoda has an edge because he not only is a magic user, he has combat skills. Like, he's all over the place, and he has a lightsaber. How does Voldemort defend himself from a lightsaber? I mean, I'm sure he can use a shield. Like, he can create a shield. But does that defend him from the lightsaber?
You know, it depends on what kind of spells you're casting, you know? And that's the thing, is that, like, if he has a shield spell and if he has a... You know, it depends on how fast he can react to whatever Yoda's doing.
And he turns to smoke too, right? He could vanish.
He can turn to smoke. He can block spells. He can create spells. And the thing is, if he gets the right, I think it would be luck. Because I think you're right. I think just as far as combat goes, Yoda would probably have an edge. But Voldemort's, if he hits the killing curse or the torture curse at the right time, Yoda's completely screwed. But it'll be luck. You know, looking at the armies, I would put the Jedi against Death Eaters. If you look at it as like a larger thing, mm-hmm. I think the Jedi would be able to hold their own against the Death Eaters as long as force powers are able to block curses. And that is just deciding, you know, since those two things don't exist in the same universe, you just have to figure out whether or not that would matter. It's kind of like the old joke of how Star Trek versus Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
that you just...
The Enterprise versus the Millennium
Enterprise
Falcon.
Just beams a couple of photon torpedoes onto the bridge.
End of story.
End fight. So it's like, you know, if you decide that in the universe they won't work together, then that's a different conversation. But I think that as long as the force powers can block curses in some way, that they have a fighting chance. And I agree with you that Yoda would probably be better, like, as far as combat.
Let's just, for kicks, say that the Death Eaters were fighting the Sith.
The Sith? Ooh.
So, I mean, I can envision dark Jedi knocking them out of the sky.
I agree.
Cheapy little broomsticks with their force lightning.
No, I agree. And I am such a huge fan of Harry Potter and all of that. But yeah, I agree with you. I think the Sith would completely obliterate the Death Eaters. Yep.
What say you?
What say you, people out there in podcast land?
Arm up. Yoda wins.
Yeah, we think Yoda wins.
Okay.
We think Yoda wins, but that it might be... It would be a good fight, though.
So the Star Wars universe is pulling ahead here.
Star Wars universe is definitely pulling ahead. Okay, so the next one we have is completely nothing to do with Star Wars. The White Witch versus the Wicked Witch of the West.
So you know more about the White Witch than I do.
I do.
And she's from the Chronicles of Narnia.
And I looked up some stuff about her that I had forgotten or didn't know because I've read the whole series. She's actually half giant and half what they call djinn, and the djinn were descended from Adam's first wife Lilith, who, as we know, was the mother of demons. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. And Adam had a wife other than Eve.
Well, there's some Gnostic legends,
okay,
that say that he had a first wife who is the mother who rebelled and became the mother of all of the demons. Once C.S. Lewis converted to Christianity, it was this is what he wrote afterwards. Mm-hmm. So he based a lot of this on Christian traditions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the stories are very linked to, you know, to the Bible in a lot of ways. So, yeah, Lilith is definitely... I can't believe I've never heard of that. Anyway, so it is interesting. I don't know that
Lilith's
it's really...
not in the Bible, so I didn't know about her.
No. I mean, it's about... It's like, it's more of a legend thing.
Yeah, and I know. There's just a lot of stuff.
There's other scholarly
work. I don't doubt you.
It's based on the scholarly work, but... And it's also just kind of a funny idea that there's a woman out there who fathered all of
his ex-wife.
Who mothered all the demons, which is, I don't know, that's a hilarious thought to me. But anyway, so basically, what better way to give the White Witch like horrible power than to make her part of, you know, be a demon, be descended from the original mother of demons. I mean, that's a great way to put it. You know, I mean, that definitely conjures up an image of phenomenal cosmic power, you know. And so she has a lot of power. But what's really interesting is that anybody that knows the Narnia story is that Narnia's world intersects with our world, with the human Earth world, the one that we live in. And her powers don't work here. So that's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. But I think the Wicked Witch of the West might be able to say the same thing about her. Anyway, so I thought that was kind of a interesting thing that her powers don't work outside of Narnia. But she has a lot of them. She can turn people into stone. She's very strong. She's a strong warrior. And obviously she has more power in the snow, which is why she's the White Witch. And it seems like she was, you know, a combination of several different figures, including the Snow Queen, which is what Frozen was based on. Hans Christian Andersen. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
So anyway, it's kind of a cool little thing about the White Witch. So, and I think a very good counterpoint to the Wicked Witch of the West. You want to tell us about her?
There are several versions of the Wicked Witch of the West, because in the book written by Baum, she's an old hag with, you know, three pigtails or something like that, and she has silver slippers instead of ruby slippers. And my favorite version of the Wicked Witch is the 1939 Wicked Witch, played by Margaret Hamilton. She can mess you up. I mean, she has, she can catch you on fire. She has her crystal ball. She can see where you are, you know, wherever you are. She flies on a broomstick. She has a band of flying monkeys that are creepy. When I was little, I was more afraid of the flying monkeys than I was of the Wicked Witch.
The White Witch also has basically like little creepy animals that protect her.
Yeah.
She has kind of a band of, they're not orcs because they're like real animals, but they're like the mean ones.
Yeah, and the White Witch, can't she control the weather?
She can control the weather.
So she can just make it snow or rain on Elphaba. Or is that how you say her first
Elphaba?
Name? Elphaba. Yeah. Boom, it's over. Well, she's melting.
See, okay. I was thinking about that, but I almost think it's not fair to include that particular weakness in a fight like this.
Oh, you have to.
I don't think it's fair to do that, but I still am I'm on the side of the White Witch, because it feels like she, I don't know, I think they are definitely evenly matched, but I think the White Witch just has a little bit of an edge, and somehow she's meaner. Like, you know, and of course we're kind of changed a little bit knowing the story of Wicked, and so it gives Elphaba a little more context. Whereas the White Queen, the White Witch, is a little more like just pure evil. She's basically the devil. Like, she's descended from Satan.
Yeah. In the book and in the musical, and I say book, I mean Wicked the book, not the Wizard of Oz books. It's basically all Glinda the Good Witch's fault. reason that Elphaba became
bad
because she's always stealing her man and, you know, just treating her like dirt. She's the popular girl who's just a snob and really treats her like crap. And so she just becomes an evil person. So, yeah, you're kind of, we have that background on her. Whereas the White Witch is just...
She's just evil. Like,
she is Sauron of the...
She is.
Chronicles of Narnia.
She really kind of is. She is. So, yeah.
It's kind of hard to bite that. I mean, and Elphaba is kind of like the Sauron. If you think of it that way. I mean, she's powerful, but she's not like the...
Well, but...
She is like a dictator and a ruler.
In that world, though, I mean, think about it, though. In Wizard of Oz, even in Wicked, she kind of has a power no one else has and no one can control. That's the thing that's scary about her. And that's why everybody wants to, you know, everybody's trying to manipulate her and stuff, is because no one else has that power. She cannot be... No one can control her and no one can fight her. because she's too powerful. Like, there is no other power like that in Oz.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. There isn't.
But and she needs the slippers.
Well, that's true.
And what is there anything like that that the White Witch needs in order to be all powerful?
She needs to be in Narnia.
That's it.
So both of them have kind of a pretty horrible disability if they're in the wrong place at the wrong time. Mm-hmm. So what would be really funny is to have them both on Earth.
Yeah.
In the middle of a Nebraska cornfield.
But then they would just have to pull each other's hair and
yeah, then they would just have like a slap fight. But I think that I don't know why I keep calling her White Queen, but the White Witch, I think she has an edge there too because she's like the size of Tim Duncan. So
wow.
Yeah, she's very tall.
I just started one of the books and I haven't really gotten too far. So I haven't even gotten to the part where she's in it yet. So,
oh, really? What are you starting with? Are you going in order of publication or order?
No, I'm going in the order that C.S. Magician's Lewis suggested.
Magician's Nephew first?
Yes.
Yep. Yep. That's good. Yep. Yeah. Russell just started that one.
Okay. So, ooh. White Witch.
I think we're saying White Witch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Bless her heart. But I do love the Wicked Witch of the West. I was her. I played her. Let's skip to another chick fight.
Okay.
Bellatrix.
Bellatrix versus Kaylin Amnall.
Bellatrix be crazy. And so that's why she would win against almost anyone except for Molly.
You do have something there, but I think I actually talked to myself because at first I was leaning towards Bellatrix because, I mean, she was under the tutelage of Voldemort. I mean, she's like...
And she's great.
The last person standing with him at the end, you know?
She is.
And she defeated Tonks and Shacklebolt and Sirius.
Mm-hmm.
And she defended herself from Dumbledore.
Like she did.
Deflected a bolt of thunder or whatever from him. So mm-hmm. So she's pretty darn awesome.
She is.
A crazy bitch.
Well, but that's the thing is that, like, I think she's a perfect example of why the dark side is more powerful is because you get crazy enough and people just don't come near you.
And this is why Kaylin probably can take her out because Kaylin Amnall is the mother confessor. Mm-hmm. And at first, I didn't think that she could do it because she would have to touch Bellatrix. She has the power to make anyone she touches become her servant and do anything that she asks them to do. And whenever she is in her normal mode, mm-hmm. she has to touch people and she has to regenerate for a couple of hours to do it again. Okay. But when she's under Khondar, which is I think it's called the Blood Rage,
mm-hmm.
she doesn't have to touch nobody.
Mm.
She can, without contact, convert an entire army to do her bidding. She has the ability to use something called additive and subtractive magic.
Okay.
Additive magic, it's good magic. Subtractive magic is what she can tap into when she becomes under the state of the Blood Rage, which she can only use when she's defending someone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she can only drop into that when someone is under dire, like, something bad is going down. She goes into this, and her eyes turn, like, blood red. She has super strength. In The Legend of the Seeker, Darkenrall, your lover...
Indeed.
And one of his henchmen was sticking these needles all in her. And he was going to steal her confessor powers. And he said the first one he would turn would be the guy that she's sworn to protect and who she's in love with, Richard, who is the Seeker. Of course, they're harming her by sticking all these needles in, but that doesn't turn her. It's when he says that the first person he's going to confess is Richard. And all of a sudden... all of those things that he was sticking in her that were really long, like knives, mm-hmm. they come shooting out of her all at once and like hit that guy that was sticking them in her. They just cover him. She converts everyone in the room and they all turn on Darkenrall. I think she could stand toe to toe with her. I don't know who would win, but
I think she could too. But it's interesting though that is the thing that turns her because remember how Bellatrix died. is because she was trying to attack Molly's children, and Molly was defending them.
Exactly.
So that is kind of an interesting twist on why Bellatrix might not be able to win this. But
here's
I still kind of give it to Bellatrix.
I hear something else, though. Something else. If the Mother Confessor touches you, you come under her power. Mm-hmm, but if she touches a Mord Sith, they're dead. Because they're the opposite of the Confessors. The Confessors are pure good, and the Mord Sith are evil because they've been twisted and suffered, and there's just nothing good left in them. So they're like two opposite poles. And if a Confessor touches a Mord Sith, dead. So if Bellatrix is pure evil because she is Voldemort's henchman,
she's pretty evil.
She's dead. But here's another thing. In the TV show, a wizard could deflect the Confessor's power.
And Bellatrix is a trained witch. So
I don't know.
I think it would be a good fight.
It would be interesting. Because if she could like turn... She wouldn't turn anyone who was good, so she would have to turn one of the Death Eaters. But then they could, if they weren't paying attention, if they weren't paying attention to her.
But now remember, if you're looking at it like, I like looking at the whole thing. But if you also turn it to, Thunderdome scenario.
She's by herself.
She's by herself. She has no one to defend. She has no one to help her. It would be hard to get close to Bellatrix because she's basically a whirling dervish,
So is Kaelin. Kaelin is trained in the martial arts and she wields two blades. She's basically Legolas with the blades.
I realize that, but she has lightning. I mean,
so does the Confessor. When she's under the blood rage, she can summon blue lightning.
But that's the thing, though, is that like if there's no one there to defend, I'm just putting it out there.
Okay.
In the Thunderdome scenario, if there's no one there to defend, and Bellatrix is not, doesn't do anything stupid, which she might, and say anything against anyone, then it may not trigger the blood rage. And it's just the idea of mano a mano. And that's why in that scenario, I would give it to Bellatrix. I think if the blood rage was triggered, that Bellatrix would be screwed. But I think if that was not triggered, that Bellatrix would win. That's my opinion.
Okay.
But cool.
Yeah.
We learned more about the Sword of Truth and we learned more about Harry Potter. Very exciting. I like it. All right, let's go back to Saruman versus Dooku.
Yeah.
Christopher Lee versus Christopher Lee in the ultimate grudge match of Christopher Lee.
Yeah. We pretty much know their powers because we've already looked it over when we were talking about Sauron versus Palpatine.
True, but Saruman is not as powerful.
No, you're right. But, the magic of the Middle Earth world is...
And remember, people always think it's weird that Gandalf was able to fight the Balrog, right? In the levels of the hierarchy, the wizards are on the same level as the Balrog. That's the reason why he was able to fight him for so long. And so you have to remember, Saruman was actually a higher level of the order than Gandalf and was of that level of wizard he's a notch above somebody who faced Balrog. So you have to think about it in those contexts.
I think it's Saruman in this case because
I think so too.
He also has the ability to command. Not only does he have similar abilities like force abilities, like Dooku can hold people in the air, and so did Saruman, and they both have weapons that can wield like crazy men.
Yeah.
But Saruman can command orcs, goblins,
the weather,
animals, crows. He can just like send them to Dooku and have them all like peck his eyes out.
I agree.
Dooku's a badass too, but
he is a badass.
I
think he'd be able to hold his own for a while. I don't think it would be as easy as Saruman would think it would be.
Right.
But I think that eventually Saruman would definitely win.
I think Dooku would end up in the tower and the eagles would not save him.
I think you're right.
They would leave him up there to rot.
All right. I want to go to Cordy versus Cersei. So Explain Cersei this for those of us who do not who are not
Cersei Lannister is a skank. Just go there first. She sleeps with a brother. She killed a small child by shoving him off of a castle thing.
Wonderful.
I think I read, because I only read the first book in the Game of Thrones series, I don't know more than that, but I read that she had children with her brother, which she also knocked off. Now, if I'm wrong, you know, let me know. I'm not going to argue that because I don't know this universe as well as others, I'm sure. Sith Jen probably is going to be the first to tell me. I think this is really about power because she is powerful. And there's a perfect clip I found, which she's like surrounded by a band of guards and they confront this guy on her in her palace somewhere. And he obviously is a guy who worked himself up from nothing into her court. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about the power of knowledge. Knowledge is power. He knows things about her and he can use it against her. And she goes, seize him. And all her guards grab him. She's like, cut his throat. And they're about to do it. She's like, stop. And then she goes, turn around. And they turn around. So she's like demonstrating, oh yeah? No, power is power. I am powerful. I can take you out. So that's Cersei. I mean, she is a skank with lots of power. So
the thing is, though, is that the great part about how Cordelia is written is that her bitchiness is one of her powers. You know, she... Jim's been watching through the Angel series, and the other day, there's this first season episode of Angel where she is being beaten down by this ghost, like, trying to get her to kill herself. And she's, like, getting very sad and very sad. And then the ghost makes the mistake of calling her a bitch. And then she looks up and goes, that's right. I'm a bitch. And then, like, the whole thing turns around and Cordy's able to, like, basically just defeat this ghost by the power of her personality. But then on top of it, it's almost not fair because by the end of Angel, Cordy's half demon. She gets the vision powers from Doyle. And in order to be able to handle them, because the vision powers give her like amazingly horrible headaches, in order to be able to continue to handle the vision powers, the powers that be give her half of a demon soul. They bring her up and then they give her some demon like DNA or something. I don't know how they do it. But then that makes her able to handle the visions. And so she can fight pretty well. She's also pretty powerful in her own right. She does have, you know, talking about people working for you, I mean, she has Angel working for her and then Angel's son. I think we should put a, like, all points bulletin spoiler alert on all this episode. And also the fact that she starts bitchy, but then even after stuff happens to her that would bring down some people, she just rises up. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like Cordy could definitely, even in the court over there, and the demon thing does give her a little bit of an edge in a fight.
Yeah, I didn't
know
that about her. I didn't know she had the demon thing.
But well, you know, it doesn't necessarily make her like, it's not the kind of demon that you think. I mean, you know how the Buffy universe is, that being a demon does not necessarily make you a good fighter. It just gives you a little bit of extra punch. You know, there's even some theory that Buffy's part demon, that the whole idea of the Slayer is that there's some demon in there.
Okay.
So, you know, and I maybe demon's not the right word, but you know, there's a supernaturalness to it. So, anyway. But I see what you mean. I mean, I think that, like, especially if you, all things considered, I mean, Cersei's crazy.
Also, yeah, Cersei, you never know what she might do. But also, now that I think about it, if this is a, like, a Thunderdome grudge match, Cersei wouldn't have her guards with her.
Nope. And so, Cordy has been fighting demons since she was in high school.
Yeah.
Even if she never had the demon side, I mean, she's been fighting with the Scooby Gang for a long time, so she knows how to deal with people.
Yeah, but Cersei would probably poison her water bottle or something.
No, what would happen is that Cordy would pull punches until she broke a nail, and then she would go all crazy. And then she would steal Cersei's clothes. I know my Cordy. This is actually one of my favorite ones. because this is the real enemy of Harry Potter. And those of you who know Harry Potter very well will know what I'm talking about. Dolores Umbridge. Ah, she's the worst. Versus Evil Willow.
This is going to have to be your camp here.
Dolores has... I don't even know that she's a Death Eater. Maybe she is. But she has all the wizard powers. She's a horrible person. And Evil Will... I mean, so it's... But she does have to wield through a wand. That's the one thing about all the Harry Potter people, is that they do have to wield through a wand. Evil Willow... She does not have a wand, but she does have power over heaven and earth. She has a lot of the same powers as regular Willow. She's just a lot meaner about it. As much as I love Willow, I almost think this is one of those situations where it's like the opposite of Bellatrix, because Evil Willow's so messed up that I think she'd make a mistake, whereas Umbridge is sadly...
sinister and...
She's such a psychopath. You know, mm-hmm. She's a psychopath. Dexter.
Yeah, Dexter.
And so I wonder if Willow wouldn't make a mistake because she's so upset, you know, because mm-hmm. she just lets her emotions kind of guide her. But, I mean, I feel like power-wise, I think that Willow could definitely defend herself pretty well. Mm-hmm. I mean, she did flay someone, so I think that Dolores better watch out and have her guard up, because and Willow can do it without a wand. You know, all she has to do is disarm her.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that if Willow was too distracted, that Dolores could definitely get the better of her. So I think this would be a good matchup. What do you guys think? What's the last one?
Xena versus Faith.
A combat.
Now, does Faith have the sword?
No.
Well, how is she skilled in the martial arts?
Oh my god.
She is like Buffy. She's
like Buffy. Yeah. And she's trained because she has a watcher already. Mm-hmm. When Eater, she's already had a watcher. So that means she's trained a mm-hmm. little. And she has that kind of the same, you know, the reason they're a good matchup is that Xena has a little bit of that spirit, you know, from being a warlord for many years. She was, and that's the thing, is that Faith is not a good guy. She's a good guy, then she's a bad guy, then she's a good guy again. And so there's a little bit of that kind of mixed up thing. I was looking through the Xena thing, and I don't really get the impression that Xena is supernatural, but I think that whole world is supernatural.
Yeah.
So she has to have some supernatural qualities, which is good because Faith has supernatural strength. And
does she have any sponsors that are gods, Xena? Because that could be like an equivalent to a power.
Well, that's true.
It's been so long since I watched the series. I was looking through
her stuff, and I just couldn't see anything specific except, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the only thing I can think is that they would at least have like a similar type of strength, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Faith, you know, they're both dirty fighters, you know? I think if Faith had a weapon, too, I mean, she's, you know, they all fight with weapons and bear, you know, and just punches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Faith at least can... I mean, I've seen her fight with all kinds of different weapons. So, I mean, she can. So, I don't know. I think everybody would be very tired at the end of that fight. Yeah.
That would be... And also, I mean, in martial arts, it really doesn't matter what your size is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all about your agility and thinking. You know, it's defense. And because you can outsmart your opponent and just be prepared for them. But, I mean, it's not like boxing, whereas, mm-hmm. you know, the big guy is usually the one that takes out the little guy. And they usually try to equally match them. But I think if Faith is more like she has the Asian martial arts skills, she probably, yeah, it wouldn't matter that Xena's bigger. Well, and it definitely wouldn't matter what kind of weapon... It wouldn't matter what kind of weapon. Well, Xena comes off as a bigger chick.
I don't think she because Faith, I mean, the chick that plays Faith is actually not as, I mean, she's definitely taller than Buffy, but Buffy's, Sarah Michelle Gellar's pretty little. Mm-hmm. But I would say she's at least, I would say she's between mine and your height. You know, I really do think that. I think she's pretty tall.
Well, I mean, just like Xena's has more brawn. So.
Well, she does, but as a slayer, she has super strength.
Yeah, and she can fight demons. And she can fight demons.
She's
probably more agile.
She's probably more agile. But, you know, Xena can fight multiple people mm-hmm. at one time, and men and women and, you know, all kinds of things because she fights supernatural beings as well.
And
so,
what is that thing that she that disc that she throws?
Oh, what is that thing called? Hold on.
Oh, Sue's yelling at us right now.
Sue's definitely yelling at us. Or Anne. One of them. Hold on.
I literally watched this in high school. I mean, that's the last time
I've watched it. In the past like year, I went through kind of a Xena phase.
When did Xena come out? I thought it was 90s.
The 90s. Yeah, it was on for a while. Oh God, I don't know what it's called. And my internet is being so slow right now, I can't handle it.
I think Xena gets points just because Lucy Lawless played her too. I'm sorry.
Oh, we do love Lucy Lawless. But I like both of them. I mean, I'm a big Faith fan for sure. I mean, I think everyone would be very, very tired and then want to go for a drink.
And Xena would buy.
I don't think either of them would have to buy anything. I think they would. That's the cool thing about both of them is that they're also like excellent seductresses, you know. They can kind of get anything they want. They would be like, why are we fighting? We should be friends.
The end. It would be a draw.
I really do think this one would be a draw. I'm not kidding. It's a great way to end. So I'm glad we planned it that way, which we totally didn't. But I'm glad it worked out because that is exactly how it should have ended.
I can imagine the two of them at a bar with their arms around each other, like singing chanties. The whole bar is singing with them.
And then someone tries to like pick a fight with the two of them and then the whole bar goes down.
Yeah, and they just leave. They're done fighting for the day.
I like that. That's a good way to end the podcast,
and
I think.
End scene.
Well, that was fun. This is a fun exercise. I liked it.
Me too.
Yay.
We have more of these kinds of things this year coming down the pike. Well, if you have any suggestions or comments, or if you've thought of anything that we've forgotten, because we do not pretend to be the all-knowing nerds. So if you have something to add to this argument, please do send it in. We would love to hear your points or counterpoints. And you can do that by calling our voicemail line at 432-363-4742. We love voicemail. We prefer voicemail. But you can also write to us. And you can write to us or send audio comments recorded on your smartphone, your tablet device, or your computer, or written emails to girlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks@gmail.com. You can also find all of our contact information, including social media outlets and all that stuff, at anomalypodcast.com, anomalypodcast.com. We're blogging there, and you can find Anomaly Supplementals things and a page all about us and the staff and learn a little bit more about what we do and why we do it all on the website. So make sure you subscribe to it too, because you can do that. Totally can. And we're on Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest. We're big Pinterest users.
We are.
So, and we're on Goodreads too. Yeah. So that's this week's Anomaly, at least. We hope you enjoyed it and we'll be back soon.
I'm Angela.
And I'm Jen. And you've been listening to the Anomaly Podcast, where female and fandom converge. This is that part we told you we weren't going to play in the first part of our show because it has spoilers. And it's about how awesome and epic Galadriel is.
Yes, it is.
Yes. We couldn't think of anyone that she would be
evenly matched with.
Yeah, just not one single person, except possibly the whole White Tower.
The whole White Tower. Well,
Wheel of Time, the White Tower is kind of like the entire Jedi Order.
It's like if the entire Jedi Order were all Galadriels.
Yes. And at their head is the most powerful Aes Sedai ever to walk the earth.
Right. It's funny because when we were talking about this, we were kind of going through the different Aes Sedai and the different characters. This is full spoiler alert. We're going to talk about Wheel of Time however we want.
Yeah.
So either if you have no interest in reading or if you've already read it or if you don't care, please continue listening. I do think that Swan or Egwene, especially Egwene towards the end, would definitely give them a run for their money. And I always was thinking about the women of the White Tower, but I totally forgot about Rand. He can use Sidene. Is it Sidene? Yeah. Sidar? It's Sidene when it's men, right?
Well, it's been a while. Let me look. Yeah, because it's the yin and the yang symbol. And right. One half of the magic is only power that women can wield. And one half of the magic is only power that men can wield.
And it's weird how the power is sort of sexist, though, because even though it's fair and sexist, because just like how men are like stronger than women, evidently men are stronger individually, but a group of women can overpower a man that has the power.
Yes.
So
they
it's like
a circle.
So there is a way to do it. There is some kind of balance, but, and that's what's kind of cool about the Wheel of Time in general is that, you know, you always get the impression like in Star Wars that, you know, except for Anakin, everybody who has the Force pretty much just has the, you know, either got it or you don't type mm-hmm. of thing. And yeah, just like anything else, there's going to be people that are better and worse. But really, all of the Jedi are pretty much portrayed at the same skill level. Whereas in the Tower and in these, you know, vast number of books, I mean, you have everything from someone who can barely make the wind blow to people who can wield fire, you know. So it's like, you know, I think of all of the people, I'm a big fan of Swan, even though she did get crippled, basically. I think that at the end of the day, she could have, you know, if she would have continued to have her power and didn't get stilled and then healed, that she would have been just as powerful as Egwene. But Egwene is pretty amazing. So I think if I was going to pit any of the women against Galadriel, it would be Egwene, but I still think Galadriel would win.
Yeah. Moraine probably could also, like the three Moraine. Of them together probably could go against Galadriel.
I think so. Yeah, I agree.
And the reason we're thinking Aes Sedai is because they're more nature oriented, where, you know, when they create a spell, it's called a weave. Mm-hmm. And it's made with the one power, which is earth, air, fire, water, and spirit. And they can mm-hmm. like arrange it all to make different weaves or spells that they can use. You know, and the thing,
it's a very scientific fantasy book.
Yeah, Aes Sedai do not use their power for evil. Ever to fight other people unless they're protecting.
They take an oath to that effect, which really messes with how they're able to handle themselves in any given situation. And it does kind of mess with how they're able to fight too.
Mm-hmm.
The oath does. And so that's an interesting aspect of it. I don't think we've talked about before, but
we really need to revisit this universe, but...
We do. But Galadriel, though, is like not really held in by any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And you also get the impression that Galadriel is almost a true neutral sometimes as far as alliance. I mean, obviously, she's great. She's good. You know, she's a good soul. But you always get that impression that like there's always that pull of like maybe if she went really crazy, that everything would probably be burnt to a cinder.
And you kind of saw that whenever she offered the ring.
Well, you saw it there and you also saw it in The Hobbit. We just recently watched Battle of the Five Armies where they did that scene that doesn't exist in The Hobbit where she's defending everyone against Sauron. And it is a giant bunch of magic that she's using there. And she goes... In order to get that much power, she has to go towards that darkness to wield that much power. But she can do it.
Yeah.
You know, she is older. I mean, the Aes Sedai are older, but she's like thousands of years old, a couple thousand years
old. Yeah. The Aes Sedai, you can't tell how old they are because of the use of the one power. It keeps them looking
young.
But
they're more like, if you're a Lord of the Rings person, they're more like Aragorn.
Yes, you're right.
They're more like the Numenoreans and mm-hmm. less like the elves. So it's as far as like being able to age and stay like a youthful appearance.
Yeah.
So they can't get 1,000 years old or 3,000 years old, but they can get into their 80s, 90s that and still be of youthful appearance. So.
Yeah. What was the power that Moraine would use that she
Balefire?
She was not supposed to use that. That's the table, but
Balefire is my name in Star Trek Online. That's the name of my family, the Balefire Legacy.
I didn't know you were playing that.
Oh, I haven't played it in a while, but I played it long enough to get a legacy.
Balefire.
I couldn't believe that wasn't taken yet. It's such a badass name, Balefire.
Well, that's more fantasy, but it's pretty awesome. She can basically wipe the existence of anything off the face of the earth with Balefire. Rand uses it to completely erase people from the fabric of time.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So that's like...
Well, so this is interesting. So I feel like against the three of them, they would be able to hold their own at least for a little while. What do you think about Galadriel and Rand? You know, especially thinking Luthien and all that kind of, you know, together. What do you think of that?
It's interesting, especially since Galadriel, her power, we know in the books, is we just know she's powerful. People fear her.
Yeah.
They think she's like a witch because they're just so scared of her. She's so powerful and old. And
she has a ring. She's a ring bearer.
She's a ring bearer. She's mysterious. So we don't know the full depth of her power.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I can say one way or the other who would win. I think that, you know, I'd like to think Galadriel would win just because...
I'm going
to
give it to Galadriel.
Because of the one ring. I mean, the ring.
Mm-hmm.
The ring of power.
Mm-hmm.
But Rand has the sword.
He has the sword and he has the legacy.
Yes. He's also two people in one.
Yeah.
Which makes him nuts and unstable, which could give the point
the
to
nuts
Galadriel.
Edge. But see, then Galadriel, though... You know, it's what you think is more important. You know, she kind of has, you know, the umbrage quality. Not that she's a sociopath or a psychopath, but I think she can like keep herself together because Rand is a little nutso, you know, and I think Galadriel would be able to kind of keep herself. She would know what's going on around her and keep her wits about her while she was fighting, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
That would be interesting. What do you guys think? Has anyone read The Wheel of Time? I know Rico has tried to read it, but some
Jim
people,
might have an opinion about this.
I would like to know what Jim's opinion is.
Yeah, Jim, Jim is halfway through his like third reading of the Wheel of Time series.
Yeah, it's a good series. And I love the way the women are portrayed in the book. I mean, they're so interesting. I think I love them more than the Jedi.
Wow. Yes,
I do. It's so interesting, all the little the houses within, you know, the White Tower.
They're
so interesting, and they're like families, you know, and I don't know. It's just really cool. And it's fun to talk about who you might be within the White Tower, too, like what house.
Well, it's just such a rich universe, you know, like it's just so... There's so much to it, and there's so much that goes on, and there's all these characters and all this detail, and... You know, the ins and outs of this world. But of course, Star Wars is like that too. You know, the ins and Lord of the Rings. I mean, it's like the ins and outs of these worlds. It's interesting to me and it's sad to me that world has never been made into anything. And I think it's because of rights disputes, which is so sad.
Somebody bought the rights.
Somebody,
make the movie.
An idiot bought the rights somehow. And it's just like,
curses.
It's just been, you know, it's just been bastardized and like, I think it happened to Spider-Man for a long time. That's why we didn't get a Spider-Man for a really long time because of the same reason. But anyway, I'm hoping that eventually the right person will get the rights to the Wheel of Time because it is just and I would hope that they would do more of a Game of Thrones type of thing with it than a movie because I think there's too much.
Yeah.
There's TV too series. Much. It has to be a TV series or a mini series, something or even like Sherlock where it's like
it could
special.
Even be an MMO.
Oh my God. Well, I don't know because the only reason I wouldn't do the MMO unless it became popular as a series is just because, you know, if you know about it, it's cool. But like, I didn't know about it until you introduced it to me like 5-6 years ago, you know, whenever that was. So it's like, it's kind of like it's popular among the people it's popular around, but it's not in the culture, like in the normal culture, the way, you know, even Lord of the Rings was or Narnia or any of those things.
Yeah.
So I think that's why we kind of stuck to things that are a little more just kind of in the culture, you know, in the regular culture and geek culture, whereas this is kind of very much in
it's a niche.
World. This is very niche. So you know, but it is very cool. And if you have not had a chance, you know, if this discussion piqued your interest, Jim says start with book one.
New Spring?
No. Yeah. No, he says start with Eye of the World.
Okay.
And I liked starting with New Spring. So
I did too. I started with New Spring. That's like a prequel, but
it's a prequel.
You get to know Moraine and
Swan as
young women. Yeah. Right. I completely agree there.
Yeah.
Also, I would like to say that I would rather that Egwene, Moraine, and Swan were on Galadriel's side against Rand. Like crazy.
Yeah. That would be like crazy.
The entire what was the men's tower called? The
Asheman?
Yeah, the Asheman's Tower. They would go against the evil guy in the Wheel of Time. Yeah. Just the three of them. Take them all down.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
I'm gonna make costumes now.
We did look up all this stuff.
I see Kaylin's dress and Ladriel's dress, and I'm like,
oh. The only thing would make it recognizable would be the shawls. You know,
people knew the universe. Have my yellow dress. You know.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, like the shawl to somebody who was a fan would then go, oh yeah, you're from the, you know, you're dressed as so and so from the Wheel of Time.
Who would you put against Nynaeve?
Nynaeve Balmira. This is a good one. That's a good question.
She's scrappy.
She's scrappy.
Maybe she would be fun to fight against like one of the other Death Eaters or something. Like,
yes.
Like maybe her against Bellatrix would be hilarious.
Oh
because,
my gosh, yes.
Because Nynaeve is like such the right personality to be very
to go against her.
She'd be so over Bellatrix and all of her madness.
She's like, ugh. Yeah, because she's very practical. non-drama. She's not about the drama, but she's got a temper. So she could match her temper to temper.
She could match her temper to temper, but she would be so over all of her madness. She'd be like, oh, bored now. I love it.
Oh, okay. I love this discussion. Okay.
I hope our fans had as much fun as we did with this one. Good idea.
I think so.
Okay. Good idea. You had that like whole list and I'm like, this one.
Yeah.
Happy Super Bowl, everybody.
Happy Super Bowl. Hope whoever you liked for the game wins.
Hope your boys wins the sports balls. Bye.
Bye.
Angela and Jen want to hear from you. Call 432-363-4742. And leave them a message. Support Anomaly through feedback and donations by visiting anomalypodcast.com. That's anomalypodcast.com.
We like stars. All the stars in the sky. Especially the stars you give us on iTunes. To us, you are the biggest star in the cosmos. Go to iTunes and give us a rating. Thanks.